So we're starting to study the book of Numbers, which conjures what? When we think of the book of Numbers, we think counting, algebra, arithmetic, solving for X. We have the Latin Vulgate to blame for this exciting name. The Hebrew people called it the wilderness. It's a little more exciting than Numbers, right? The wilderness. Sounds like a Gary Polson book or something. The wilderness. So we're going to look at the wilderness. That's more exciting than Numbers, right? The wilderness. As we look at the book of Numbers and we just start going through just some basic information about it, where is it placed in the Bible? Among what books? Books of Moses. When we refer to the law, what are we referring to? These five books, right? These first five books. When we refer to the Pentateuch, we're referring to these five books. So it's nestled here in these five books. Historically, what's happened now that we... Do you remember what's been going on? Did y'all just study Exodus recently? How was that? Not the study, but I mean, what happened in Exodus? Sorry, rather ambiguous question. They exited, right? That's everywhere. They exited, okay? What did they exit from? Egypt. How were things in Egypt? Were they nice? Vacation spot? Timeshare in Egypt? Groaning people. Well, yeah. We're not done with that yet. So God heard them. God heard what was going on and sent them a reluctant leader who turned out to be just the right guy. Imagine that, God picking the right guy. And so he, with the power of God and Aaron, they lead the people out. And we close the book of Exodus at Sinai, right? So Genesis gives the people a beginning. Where am I from? Where did we come from? The oral history that had been passed down is now written down in Genesis, the book of generations. It gives future generations a concept of where they come from. What's their beginning? Did I start in Egypt? No, you started way long before. It gives people a concept of God's promises. What's happening? So Genesis is huge for the identity of the Hebrew nation. And then we have the exiting. And then we have what's next? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, also a very fun book to read. It has a blip of narrative in it, but it's pretty much the law. And Leviticus was given at Sinai. So Exodus, they get to Sinai, and at Mount Sinai, they are given the book of Leviticus. So the book of Numbers opens up, and where are they? Still at Sinai. Okay? Still at Sinai. Now, the dating of the book of Numbers is about 1406 B.C., so a few years back. Moses is the author, as we mentioned. If you want to write down some verses for the author of Moses, obviously Numbers verse 1 is pretty legitimate. Chapter 33, verse 2. John 1, 17. Second Chronicles 33:8. As far as the authorship, the Bible commentating on the authorship of the book of Numbers. Another name for this book could be called The Journey to God's Rest. The Journey to God's Rest. What is the promised rest for the Hebrew people? The promised land. Genesis 12, you know, we go back to those promises, great people, great nation, great land, you know, be a blessing to the other nations. So we go back and hearken back to that promise. Here's a land that's going to be given to them. So this account gives us information from leaving Sinai and preparations for leaving Sinai. which is what we're going to look at today, all the way up to on the other, the east side of the Jordan, ready to, or the west side of the Jordan, ready to go into to Canaan land, okay? So that's the time frame that the book of Numbers covers. It covers about 39 years. So while Leviticus really didn't cover a lot of time, it was just a recitation of law in one little narrative. The book of Numbers is made up of narrative, of poetry, of law. It has several different types of literature in the book of Numbers. There is a lot of death in Numbers, and we'll look at that later, but I believe the military term, my brother said, is like people get smoke checked in the book of Numbers. It gets rather rather interesting. So wilderness is a very good name for this book. As they are in the wilderness of Sinai, and they have no rest, okay? They have no rest, but they are going to a rest. So there's a lot of analogies that can be made as far as us. We have no rest here. This isn't the rest. We are going to a rest. So does that make... There's a lot of analogies that can be made as far as our wanderings here on earth, the things that we should and should not be doing, and then looking forward to a rest. As the people of the Hebrew nation, we're looking forward to a rest. Yes, sir?
Thankfully, we don't have to pull up our tents every so often.
Yes.
And
yes. No, we are not nomadic people. Unless you talk to my in-laws, we're typically not nomadic people. So yes, they moved quite a bit, and we'll be looking at that. Actually, chapter 33 goes through every place they were, the different places they'd been in their wandering. So it'll be interesting. Numbers is neat to kind of see the time frame of how things worked in with God's people in this time. If you want to write down some verses as far as the rest is concerned, Deuteronomy 3:20 talks about journeying to a rest. Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 20. Also chapter 12, verse 10. Chapter 25, verse 15. And Hebrews 4, 3. Journeying to a rest. And, you know, it's a great concept. When you're traveling with an end in mind, does it make the travel a little easier? I know how to get from Disney to home, but I put the little, you know, travel guy, the person telling me counting down, because that way I know when I'm going to get there. If you've flown internationally and you have those screens, and every once in a while the plane comes up and tells you where you are on your track, which is really annoying sometimes when you think you've fallen asleep and you get up and the plane hasn't even really moved. You're like, no, this is an 8-hour trip. But when we have an end destination in mind, it helps go through the process, right, of the actual traveling. And we'll see that with these people. There are some murmurings that go on. The word murmur is what? Literarily,
complaining.
It's an onomatopoeia, which I can't even spell that word, but it's a fun word. Murmuring, I can spell murmuring, but I can't spell necessarily onomatopoeia. Who can spell that? Nobody. Okay, good. Not alone. All right. So onomatopoeia, murmuring is to murmur. It's this concept of just hearing people complaining in the background, the murmuring. How many of you have had children that murmured? You're traveling in the car and you hear the murmuring from the back. The natives are getting restless. So this is that there are seven murmurings in this book. Chapter 11 begins this fun cycle. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. Chapter 14, verse 2. I'm giving this information to you so you can write it down and go back and look at this. But we'll go through this in detail later on as we get to these. But chapter 11, verses 1 through 4, chapter 14, verse 2, chapter 16, verse 1, chapter 16, verse 42, chapter 17, verse 12, chapter 20, verses 2 through 3, and then chapter 21, verse 5. Now, some of these verses are kind of connected with the same murmuring, but here's the deal. They murmur against their situation, and God provides, and then, you know, they still murmur and complain, which, if I were Moses, and we'll see this kind of later on, he prays for them and stands between these people several times. But it would be hard for me to be Moses and hearing them complain all the time and then stand between God's vengeance and the people and say, you don't want to kill him. I'd be like, yeah, smoke check him, get him out of here. Let's start over again, right? The people that complain all the time, it can get on your nerves. So Moses is really an exemplary guy as far as a leader is concerned. So he's the right man for the job. Spiritual lesson. Spiritual overlaying lesson for the book of Numbers. God's people can move forward when they trust His promise and lean on His strength. And we'll see that throughout this book. God's people can move forward when they trust in His promises and lean on His strength. When we try the concept, I do it. Do you remember that, little children? When little children start to kind of grasp what something is, and they think they can do it, and they say, I do it. I'll do it. And you're like, okay, you can try that. But when we trust on God's promises and God's strength, we can move forward. Just to give you a brief outline, what I like to do with an introduction is to give us an idea of what the whole book encompasses, so when we start going through it in detail, we can see how that kind of plays in with the different parts of the book. So Numbers chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 25, 18 gives us the first generation. The first generation. We start with a counting. And the first counting. What happened to the first generation in the wilderness? Do you remember? They died off. Do you remember why they died off? Lack of faith. They got up to the southern part of the promised land. The 12 spies were sent in. 10 came back, said, there's no way. No way. And the other two said, yeah, we can do it with God, which is what we talked about earlier. We can do it with God. And so chapter 1, verse 1 through 25, basically the end of chapter 25, gives us the history of the first generation. And then they die off. Which, we'll get to this in just a second, but the numbering of that first generation is over 600,000 people. But that's just the males over 20 years of age and still able to go to war. So double it, 1.2 if they're married, which typically they were at that age, and then if they have children. And so we're looking at about millions of people who are over the age of 20. Were in the wilderness. Died in the wilderness. When you think about how many funerals, how many graves, why there's so much in the Bible about talking about in Levitical law concerning, you know, being around a dead body, you'll see that quite a bit in the book of Numbers. So the first generation out of Egypt, chapter 1, verse 1 through 25, 18. And then just to break it down to give you some subpoints, the preparation for leaving Sinai, chapter 1, verse 1 through the end of chapter 10. Or actually, well, chapter 10, verse 11. So chapter 1, verse 1 through 10, 11 is all preparation for leaving. And then chapter 11, verse 1 through the end of chapter 25, we have this cycle of rebellion, death. Rebellion, death, and deliverance. So they're traveling, but, you know, things come up while they're traveling. Different rebellions, different situations. So they rebel, people die, They're delivered from the situation. So that's chapters chapter 11, basically chapter 11 through the end of chapter 25. I'll give you a sub point there. And some of these failures, like Kadesh Barnea, are mentioned later on in the New Testament. And we'll see that when we get closer to that study. But we'll see how these examples were used as don't do this later on throughout the history. When they would look back to these failures, look back to these times and say, don't do that. Don't be like them. Don't be like the rebellion of Korah, which is a really cool... I mean, just thinking about it, the rebellion of Korah, the ground opened up and thousands of people were swallowed into the ground and it closed back up. And they still tried to complain even after that. I would have been like, really? Really? The ground just swallowed thousands of people and you're going to complain still? Okay. So we'll get to see some of that throughout the book of Numbers. All right, so the second section, 26:1 through the end of the book, 26, basically 26 through 36, we have the second generation out of Egypt. There's another census taken. Basically, chapter 26 is the second census. And so this marks a second generation out of Egypt. So that gives us a basic outline for this book as we look into, again, looking into studying it, give us an idea of what's going on, an overview of the book as we begin. The chronological setting, as we mentioned before, they're basically at the base of Mount Sinai at this moment. They're in the wilderness of Sinai. It took them about 3 months to get to this place. And it's interesting as we look at there's years, days, months, and years mentioned throughout the book of Numbers, and we wonder where chronologically what they're counting down from. So the Passover took place. You remember in Egypt. The Passover. So that was in Exodus 12, verses 2 and 6. Let's look over there. Exodus 12, verse 2 says, "This month shall be the beginning of the months for you. It is to be the first month of the year for you." And then verse 6. "You shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel is to kill it at twilight." It's talking about the Passover lamb. And so we have the lamb for remembrance of the Passover. And so this was to mark the beginning. This month, Exodus 12, verse 2, this month was the beginning of the calendar for them. This marked the first year, so this was year one for the Hebrew nation. They weren't concerned about 1406 BC or any of that kind of stuff. That wasn't even on their calendar. This was the first, this is day one for this nation. And so when you look later on in the countdown, or the count up, rather, in the book of Numbers, these are the numbers they're counting. This is the point, this is day one for them. So Passover was day one for them. Now the tabernacle was erected the first day of the first month of that, starting that second year. So 1 year after the Passover, that first Passover, the tabernacle was erected in Exodus chapter 40. We see that Exodus chapter 40, verse 2. So we're going through timeline up to where we are with Numbers. So they've exited. They're in the Mount. They're there at the Mount at Mount Sinai, and they've erected the tabernacle. And after 1 month later, they prepare to leave. That's when Numbers begins. Numbers chapter 1, verse 1. On the first day of the second month, Numbers chapter 1, verse 1, is when they're preparing to leave Sinai. They got to get some things in order before they do that. But that gives us chronologically where this nation is, where this people, where they are as they are preparing to leave. And so, if we continue on, Numbers chapter 10, verses 11 and 12, is 19 days later they moved, on the 20th day of the second month of the second year. And then Deuteronomy, that was Numbers chapter 10, verses 11 and 12. 19 days later. When the book of Deuteronomy opens on the first day of the 11th month of the 40th year, so 38 years, 8 months, 10 days after leaving Sinai. Does that make sense? Deuteronomy, that's Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 3. Also, the Numbers chapter 33 goes through this order also. So do we know where we are? We're at the base of this mountain, the mountain that gave them the law, where God gave them the law, the same place where this mountain trembled. And what? We can't hear it. We can't hear. You know, you go up and talk to God. So that same place, they were there for almost a year camp there. This is where, you know, the golden calf took place, and they ground it up and made them drink it. Which, by the way, if you drink gold, it gives you a stomach ache. So it wasn't like, you know, hey, just drink this. It was a little bit of a punishment for doing that. So that's where they were, and now they're preparing to leave. They're preparing to leave. Any questions or anything before we dive into this? All right. Let's look over at chapter 1 of Numbers. What do you notice right off the bat? The first verse. What are we given? Huh? God speaking directly to Moses. We're given a time stamp, aren't we? That's convenient. That helps. So the first thing out of the we're given a God is again, God is speaking to Moses, and we're given a time stamp as to when that happened. And it says, take a census of all the congregation of the sons of Israel, verse 2, by their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of the names, every male head from 20 years old and upward, whoever is able to go out to war in Israel. You and Aaron shall number them by their names. So they're given, this is the task they're given, is the numbering, the census. And then as they prepare for that, it says with you, verse 4, with you moreover, there shall be a man of each tribe, each one head of his father's household. These then are the names of the men who shall stand with you, of Reuben, Eliezer. And so it goes through the list of these men who are going to help them with the census, right? Now, do we continue to do a census here in this great nation? And most nations do a census. A census marked the beginning of the birth of Christ. Remember the census, the Romans were taking a census also. So this is a common practice. We're looking at those who are able to go to war, 20 years old and up. They're still able to physically go to war. Now, something of note, as you go through lists and you go through names, it's kind of like blah, 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 name, son of, whatever. Let's skip through this. A lot of times we skip over something that's kind of interesting here. There's a little nugget right here with this one. Of Judah, Nashon, son of Amnadab. Look at Ruth chapter 4, verse 20. Ruth chapter 4, verse 20. If somebody wants to read that for us. Ruth 4. Whose lineage is that? Keep on reading on down on that down. That's the end of. Read through the end of that. We got who?
David.
So this guy is a great, great, great grandpappy of David, who is a relative of whom? That's pretty important to us. Jesus. So this guy is a relative in the direct lineage of Jesus, which is something that's interesting to kind of see how, you know, we talk about Jesus being sprinkled on every page throughout the Bible, and here he is again. Here it comes out in this lineage here, and these people. So here's a man that's going to help with the census, and so they begin to take the census. And so verse 17, so Moses and Aaron took these men who had been designated by name, so God chose them by name, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first day of the second month. All right. So this message was given to him, and the list of names was given to him when? Verse 1, chapter 1, verse 1. All right, and then they do it that same day. What does it say here? The first day of the second month? So the message is given to Moses, and he assembled these guys. Did he wait around? That's kind of interesting. I find that interesting. He didn't wait around. Apparently, he got things in order and got that taken care of. And so they put this together. And so the rest of chapter 1 gives us the listing of the numbers of the tribes. Again, but just the men that are able to go to war. All right, we're not every man, woman, and child is not listed in the census. Look at the end of the chapter, and we're given the total. So all the numbered men, and this is verse 45 of chapter 1, so all the numbered men of the sons of 20, or sons of Israel by their father's households from 20 years old and upward, whoever was able to go out to war, even all the numbered men were 603,550. So this was their men able to go to war. Verse 47, what's different about the Levites? They're the priestly tribe. What does this verse say about them as far as the census? They weren't numbered. They weren't counted among the men that were able to go out to war. They weren't numbered among them. The Levites, however, were not numbered among them by the father's tribe, for the Lord had spoken to Moses, saying, "Only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor shall you take their census among the sons of Israel." And so they're appointed over the tabernacle and to take care of the tabernacle. And remember, when we refer to a tabernacle, what are we referring to? A tent, which was the tabernacle of meeting, or was where the offerings were made. So here is a tent where God, the presence of God came in among them. And we'll see how that plays out in their traveling and everything later on as we get to that. And so chapter 2, we are given the arrangement of the camps. The arrangement of the camps, chapter 2. How many of you have been camping before? Like in a tent, seriously in a tent. I'm not talking about like motorhome doesn't really count. But in a tent. All right, so when you go camping and you place your tent, is it important how you place your tent? Have you all thought about that? So you want to think about, okay, where's the campfire going to be, and how are the winds? What are the prevailing winds? Because you don't want to be like in front of the campfire and be the secondary chimney right into your tent, right? That would be bad. What's that?
Look out for ants.
Look out for ants. Yes. Prepare the soil. Get everything ready so you're not sleeping on a pine cone. So these are all things you got to think about when you're setting up camp. All right, so here are over 600,000 just men, all right? And you've got to organize a camp for millions of people. How is it organized? What is this chapter saying? peruse it just a second. And what are we getting at here as far as how is this camp organized? They're put together into four groups. Now there's 12 tribes, and they're put together in four groups, three in each. And they're arranged north, south, east, and west of what? What's their center part? What's right in the heart of them? The tabernacle. They're camping around their tabernacle. And then as a barrier around the tabernacle, the Levites camp around the tabernacle so that nobody can just walk up in the middle of the night, oops, I walked into the tabernacle. Like, you know, so they're created to be sort of a barrier around the tabernacle. I find that's kind of interesting to me, think about how that worked out. So here they are camped out in this way, and they're arranged by their families, are given a standard. In verse 34, thus the sons of Israel did according to all the Lord commanded Moses. So they camped by their standards, and so they set out every one by his family according to his father's household. And so they're organized by family groups, they're organized by household, and they're organized by these larger groups around, and they were given a standard also. So that's chapter 2. Chapter 3, we're given the Levites. The Levites are given to be, chapter 3, verse 1. Now these are the records of the generations of sons of Aaron and Moses at the time when the Lord spoke to Moses on the Mount Sinai. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron: Nadab, the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Now what happened to Nadab and Abihu? Yes. They made a mistake, right? They made a mistake. One of the few narratives we have in the book of Leviticus is the error of Nadab and Abihu, all right? So they're no longer with us in the story, but these are the sons. And they were anointed priests to serve, but Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered strange fire. So here we are given just a reminder in case anybody forgot. Before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. And they had no children, so Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests in the lifetime of their father Abraham. And so he said in verse 5 or verse 6, bring the tribe of Levi near and set them before Aaron the priest that they may serve him. And so the tribe of Levi becomes this tribe that serves the priests. Okay? Now every priest was a Levi. But not every Levite was a priest. Okay, so there becomes a pecking order even in this group. All right. In verse 11, again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Now behold, I have taken the Levites from among the sons of Israel instead of every firstborn." And you remember, the firstborn was sacred to God. And what is he saying here? I've taken the Levites instead of, in place of, okay? And so then he begins talk about the duties of the priests. And then in chapter 4, we have the duties of the different sections. So the sons of, the different sons of Levi, duties of the Kohath. Levi had three sons, Kohath, Gershon, and Merari. These are the three sons of Levi. And so the tribe of Levi is broken up into these three sections. And each family based from these fathers' heads, you may have in your section heading duties of the Kohathites. Do you all have that in your chapter headings? Chapter 4. And so those family groups were broken down into different units, what they were supposed to do. And so the Kohathites carried the furniture of the tabernacle. They were the ones that were in charge of carrying all the lampstands and all the things, the altars, and all of that that had to do with the worship in the tabernacle. All right. And if you skip down to verse 21, the duties of the Gershonites, they transported the fabric items of the tabernacle. In verse 22, take a census of the sons of Gershon. So they were able to take a census of each of these groups. But what's interesting in verse 23, it says, take a census of the households by their families. Verse 23, from 30 years and upward to 50 years of age. It's different. What did we say earlier the census was? 20. The census for the Levites was 30. How old was Jesus when he started teaching? According to Luke chapter 3, verse 23. About 30. That's just something. Can we make a big deal of it? Maybe. But I think it's just interesting. That was when he began public ministry. When he was able to be considered one that was listed in a priestly duty, was at that age. So each one was counted. And the responsibility of Eleazar in verse 16, the son of Aaron, a priest, is the oil of the light and the fragrant incense. And then we see in verse 28 that the service of the families of the sons of the Gershonites is in the tent of the meeting, and their duties shall be under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest. And so these guys had a responsibility to make sure that everything was ready for them to touch and get ready to move. So the tent was getting ready to be broken down, and so they had to still do it in a holy way. You couldn't just, all right, go in and just start moving things. Have anybody helped a family move or helped somebody else move? And to that family member or whoever that is that you're helping move, an object has intrinsic value or emotional value, and you go in and move it like it's just another box. You can't do that. Okay, this is the temple. You got to do things correctly. And so these guys were here to help them to make sure that they didn't go in and die. Okay? Because remember later on what happens to Uzzah. So here's a situation with they are in place to make sure they do it properly and they don't die. Okay? That it may be well with you is how the Bible says that sometimes. And so these two, the sons, were there to make sure that happened. Now the Maronites, and we did not get nearly where I wanted to. If I paid you $20, would you give me more time? All right, so the duties of the Maronites, they transported the heavy wood objects and supports for the tabernacle. And so, again, the rest of this chapter breaks down how the different sections of these families are counted and numbered. And then chapter 5, 1 through 4, we have the purity of the camp. And so they got to make sure the camp is pure. Again, this is a holy people approaching a holy God. You can't just do whatever you want to do. You got to do it the way God wants it to be done. So there's step-by-step commandments for these things in preparation for leaving. Chapter 5, verses 5 through 10 is the restitution for some wrongs that were done. Chapter 5, 11 through 31 is interesting. It's a test of adultery for a wife. So if a husband suspects that his wife has been adulterous, there is a test for that. Comes in a kit. No, I'm slaying. So here is the test for that. And Leviticus 20, verse 10, tells us that if a man was caught in adultery, he would die. Okay? According to Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10. And according to the Talmud, which is the collection of Hebrew traditions, they taught that you should, before two witnesses, tell the wife that she is suspect. And then if she is still suspicious after that, then you start this process of determining. And basically what it amounted to was you went to the priest, she cleansed herself, and then she drank dust off the floor of the tabernacle, mixed with water and some other things. Some offerings were involved in that. And if her stomach swelled up and her thigh swelled up, then, you know, she was guilty. If nothing happened, then she was innocent. So it did not come in a kit. So anyway, you have to go see the priest about that. Chapter 6, the law of the Nazarites. If you want to know about the Nazarites, here's what we have, chapter 6. Some famous Nazarites were whom? Do you remember? Sorry? Samson. Samson was a famous Nazarite. Samuel was a famous Nazarite. John the Baptizer was a famous Nazarite. Those were the three, and those are the ones that were like perpetual Nazarites. Those are the ones. And then later on, they were also people who could take this Nazarite vow for a time period, a time stamp. So they were not perpetual Nazarites. But the three things a Nazarite could not do, verse 3, he shall abstain from wine and strong drink or anything, or vinegar or anything. Or verse 5, all the days of his vow of separation, no razor shall pass over his head. And verse 6, all the days of separation to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead person. And then it gives some information here about, well, if somebody happens to die right beside you, what you need to do, which comes into play for whom as a Nazarite? Samson. How many men did he kill? Quite a few, okay? And so if he's a guy who can't be around a dead guy, so he clubs a guy, you know, I imagine he might have held him by the neck and clubbed him and then dropped him. I don't know, just thinking through how he would do that with the jawbone of a donkey. And so he kills a guy and he drops dead. He says, I can't be around dead people. So there's some things here in place for Samson, all right, or for those other Nazarites who might, just somebody just happens to drop dead beside them, okay? So there's some things that are in place. God was thinking through this. He was thinking about Samson, you know. So he gives them some things for them to do in chapter 6. And we are not going to get to chapter 10 like I had wanted to. Chapter 7 gives us an offering. How much time do I have? 45 seconds. 45, okay. Let's stop here at 7, and we'll just try and go faster next time. If you want to have some homework, read 7 through the chapter 10 or peruse a little bit about Numbers. But chapter 7, we have an offering. And chapter 7 gives us the reason why they put the tabernacle or the Ark of the Covenant on a cart. Did you ever think about that? Why would they put it on a cart? They know they're supposed to use the poles, right? Even Indiana Jones knew that, right? So why would they put it on a cart? So chapter 7 gives us the why, right? Any questions, comments before we finish? What's that? Yep. We're going to see why. Thank you very much.